Okay, hey everybody, welcome to the discussion group for 10/22/2013 on a Tuesday night. We're excited about the study tonight from Steve Ozenich's book, The Great Pain Deception. This will be chapter 10. This is about the symptom imperative. A lot of what we talk about, a lot of what we try to understand, a lot of what we try to get across to a lot of folks with TMS that's trying to heal. The symptom imperative hits them, and this is something that we really want to explain to everybody what it is, so that you'll understand, so that next time this might happen on your TMS recovery, your TMS journey, then you'll know what's going on. Okay, I think this is a very important chapter. Okay, I need to tell the disclaimer tonight. Before we start, I do need to remind everyone that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. Now, with that being said, we're going to give the summary to this little three-page chapter to Bruce. And I know Bruce has always got one fired up, or he's got it from Walt Oleski, one or the other. Walt's got a great summary there I saw on the forum today. So, Bruce, take away there, buddy.
Okay, well, this is an attempt to summarize Chapter 10 of Steve Ozenich's The Great Pain Deception, entitled The Symptom Imperative Phenomenon. And this, we were all commenting before we turned the recording on, just how much information was stuffed into these brief three pages, which should be read in conjunction with Appendix A on 341, which has many, many more details of the symptom imperative phenomenon. Steve begins this chapter by stating that pain is but one symptom of an infinite array of messages revealed through the dissonance of mind and body and spirit. And he prefaces the start of the chapter with a quote from Johnny Sardo's The Divided Mind. Dr. Sarno's patient, quote, did well in the program and became pain-free in about 3 weeks. Shortly thereafter, he began to feel anxious and began to have some of his old stomach trouble again. This was the symptom imperative at work, the occurrence of two simultaneous psychogenic manifestations. And this goes back to what he had just stated, what he states at the start of the chapter. Pain is but one symptom of an infinite array of messages revealed through the dissonance of mind and body and spirit. And at the top of the next page, Steve asks, what is the pain equivalent symptom or TMS substitute? What kind of symptoms are being used for the by the psyche as substitutes for TMS pain? Steve says, this is a common question and a very good one. It is an emotional problem that expresses itself physically, somatizing, identically to pain. Important to understand is that these physical problems continuously shift as the brain attempts to keep the individual focused on the body, away from the psychological. And he gives a long list of examples. And at the end, he gives a very good example of the symptom imperative, I think, that because it contains all of the elements. You're under stress, you have an unquenchable thirst, then that goes away, and your eyes begin to reduce tear production and dry up. In other words, you get dry eye. Then that goes away, and you get a headache up the back of your neck. Then that goes away and your heel begins to hurt. Then that goes away and you become nauseated. Then that goes away. And then he adds in, get the picture? This is how it works.
Yeah.
Any combination of shifting body symptoms is characteristic of the symptom imperative phenomenon. Steve says that Dr. Sarno has called this the symptom imperative, SI, a psychological condition that requires continuing symptoms. An imperative is something that demands attention or action The conundrum is that the consciousness within us knows that it is being observed, and so it changes how we react to shifting symptoms. As long as there is unresolved conflict, the mind will continuously shift symptoms to keep fear alive. As a purposeful distraction, the symptoms bounce around in the body to keep you feeling that you have suddenly developed a real pain, a real injury. And much of the rest of the book is focused on why the symptoms become imperative, why they move around. And I think almost everyone who's gone through the TMS recovery program or is in the process of doing so experiences these symptom imperative shifts as they take care of one set of symptoms and suddenly a new set of symptoms appears someplace else, a headache, a shoulder pain. And it also functions in with placebos, because if you have a surgery for your back and the back pain goes away, quite often you'll get pain in the knee afterwards, or pain in the shoulder, or an upset stomach. So it's kind of like this is a chapter that ties everything together, the placebo, the nocebo, the shifting symptoms. And Steve says that there are an infinite number of examples of these shifting symptom imperatives. And he's recorded a bunch of them in Appendix A and gives a whole list of pain equivalents. And he mentions at the start of Appendix A that the manifestations listed below could also be divided into TMS categories, such as gastrointestinal disorders, skin disorders, genitourinary disorders, cardiopulmonary disorders, autoimmune disorders, circulatory disorders, dysrhythmic disorders, and immune deficiencies, among others. And of course, this immune deficiencies is where TMS jumps into gabar mate territory. It moves
in. Could you explain that word gabar mate, or whatever that was you just said?
Gabar mate is Dr. Gabar mate. Has a book called When the Body Says No, and he takes TMS theory up another notch by indicating that autoimmune disorders are often affected by what he calls emotionally repressive coping styles. And he goes to show that people who have heart disease, cancer, Lou Gehrig's disease, lupus, all have these same characteristic personality traits of someone who is stuffing their emotions.
So TMS can basically shift into just about anything it wants to in the mind, body, or spirit, correct?
Well, it seems like if you keep repressing long enough and hard enough, and the stress is put on your psyche by your social environment and family environment, you can move up the scale. TMS is just the first indication something's wrong. And if you get Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, or lupus, or MS, or this is where it enters in away from the autonomic nervous system, which controls your circulation, on up into your autoimmune system, which of course affects your resistance to disease and also causes allergies. It's all one ball of wax, isn't it?
Of course, this is nobody's. Again, I want to let everybody know this is nobody's fault. If you get TMS symptoms, it's nobody's fault. And really, watching John Sarno's video the other day, one guy asked him, he says, why don't everybody get TMS symptoms? And he says, well, the reason everybody don't get TMS symptoms is because some people get stomach aches, some people get knee pain, some people get allergies, and he went down this list, and I understood him as saying that he was basically calling out the symptom imperative, you know, and that was pretty cool. And then he told the three sources of rage, which was, you know, the first source was when you're born and the childhood issues. The second one was the pressures of life, you know, the critical part, the id part, and so forth like that. And the third one was like jobs, relationships, and you know, I could go on forever, you know, with the situations that cause tension, and then and stress and strain and that causes symptoms. So I think I agree with Sarno that all of us have some form, you know, of something wrong with us, you know. And with that being said, then when we start healing up, or even not while we're healing up, it just might move around. Like somebody might have a shoulder surgery. And then, you know, like you were saying a while ago, Bruce, when you was talking about what Steve wrote there, somebody might have a shoulder surgery. And then the pain will move to the right. And then they'll go have a knee surgery. And then the pain will move. You know? So with all that being said, what is the meaning of, you know, I'm sure you said it in the summary, but what is the meaning of the symptom imperative? What is it trying to prove? What is it trying to do? Right? It's not wanting to let go. And I noticed that you wrote something about that today or in forum, and it was real good, if you don't mind talking about that, Bruce.
Oh, I don't know. I was just telling Walt that his summary was fine, but it omitted all of the TMS equivalents in Appendix A, which function part and parcel with this phenomena of symptom imperative shifts. He lists here addictions, alcoholism. I'm just picking out a few of these things. He has a list of hundreds of things: allergies, angina, chronic fatigue syndrome, constipation, carpal tunnel syndrome, dry eyes. I remember getting dry eyes. If you go through this list, you will recall all of these things. When I had a herniated disc, as I began to heal, first thing I get carpal tunnel syndrome, it goes away, and then I'm reading a lot, and I think it's due to reading, but I get dry eyes until the ophthalmologist said, oh, you have dry eyes, here, take these drops.
Yeah.
And that went away entirely. I didn't even think of it as an equivalent, but it's
all part and parcel. I noticed a lot of posts here recently on the forum were about, you know, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening? And it's usually something that they fear the most. It's usually something that they never would have thought would be, you know, something like TMS, stress, tension, something generated in that order. And one of the things that Steve said in this chapter here is it will shift to something you're most fearful of, something you won't believe that's TMS. And I thought that was one of the tricks of you know, this symptom imperative. It's trying to hold on. It doesn't want to expose the rage, right, Forrest? It doesn't want you to know the rage. It thinks it. What do you got to say about that, Forrest?
I had muted myself, but yeah. I mean, I think of the symptom imperative like an animal that's backed into the corner and it's frightened and it's angry, and it's what it's afraid of is it's afraid of these emotions. It's afraid of something in your unconscious, something that creates this tension, and so it's got to distract you. And So it kind of lashes out and it tries to scare you with some physical thing. And if you're scared, great. You know, it's protected. But once you get a placebo, once you realize that it's just TMS, once you lose your fear of it, then all of a sudden it gets scared again. And so it lashes out another way. It's got to find another way to defend itself. So it's that same unconscious mechanism trying to find other ways of protecting itself.
Yeah. Like I heard a person saying, you know, the right leg got better. And then the very next day they was all happy and they was out walking, and then they slipped up and they hurt the left leg. Now, you know, I know that's a perfect example of, and now she's, or he or whoever it was, I can't remember, but now they're on to another year of therapy, which they have picked up on the TMS knowledge and they are understanding it now and it's helping them. But that's a perfect example of what the symptom imperative can do. Keep you in fear, you know? I know Tennis Thomas is dying to say something.
Yeah.
How did you know that? I was just cramming here. I mean, the last paragraph. And so Steve-O is saying the symptoms bound around the imperative for two reasons. One, to keep the conscious mind focused away from the threatening emotion. And the second, to send messages of discontent from the unconscious back to the conscious side to be resolved. I'm having trouble comprehending that because on the one hand, he's saying it's a defense mechanism preventing us from dealing with it. But then he's saying and above that paragraph that actually is kind of flattering that if you have TMS, it's obsessive, compulsive, intuitive, colorful, and highly creative personality. So we all want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm suddenly confused there about, so if you're a TMSer, you're artistic and creative, and there's conflict, the subconscious trying to send messages of discontent to your conscious, there's the conflict, and through that comes creativity. Is that where the source of creativity is? Yeah. That what he's saying?
So I've thought about this a lot. If I can jump in, I mean, yeah, it. Ahead. So he says it all begins with early separation anxieties,
yeah.
And possibly later trauma, and that leads to this specific personality type. And the specific personality is obsessive, compulsive. Often it's intuitively colorful or highly creative. I mean, I think about, you know, if you've had these traumas early on, then maybe you're more likely to become an artist. You've got these stronger feelings because you've been through something. You've got reactions to stuff because you've got these emotions deep inside. Like, you know, who becomes an artist? Often artists, you look at Van Gogh, they've had colorful lives. So it creates this special personality. And then later on, he talks about the thing, which I had lots of difficulty reconciling myself, you know, because he says the symptoms bound around in the body for two reasons. One is the story that I said, to keep the conscious mind focused away from the threatening emotions, to distract you, to protect you. And the other one sounds almost like it's exactly the opposite. It says to send messages of discontent from the unconscious back to the conscious side to be resolved.
You know what I think that means?
It's almost like there are these two opposites. So I'll let you go and then I'll
go.
It's
the divided
line right there, isn't it?
I think he's trying to. What I hear is, you know, the body saying, hey, man, I ain't happy, you know? So I'm going to put this pain on you, or I'm not happy. So, you know, I'm going to put this knee pain in you, or I'm not happy, so I'm going to give you some allergies or whatever. And you know, as long as you, and then that's when you start to learn, you know, get back in relationship with life. That's when you start to learn that you do have a loss of happiness. That's so, you know, I can understand what is do what, buddy?
A beautiful word, Herbie. Keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I can understand what he means by discontent, because that means when you're not happy with something, you're discontent with it. If you're not, you know, so he's saying the messages of discontent from the unconscious back to the conscious mind. Now, that was just a clause I read of it. But at the same time, these messages, what are the messages that we get? Well, we can get messages through dreams, we know, but you can also get messages through the pains in your body and through your emotions, correct? So, and through the illnesses that you get. So, you know, it's to me, it was, hey, man, you know, it's time to get back to relationship. It's time to get back to doing what you've always wanted to do, something you might have always held back wanting to do in your life. It's time to get back doing these things so that you can get back to relationship with life. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
By being creative, you create happiness out of that discontent causing the creativity, and you're happy, but for how long?
As long as you keep studying every day to be happy. I mean, it's like an every, I don't know if people's got to do it as much as I do it, but for me, for about the past 13 years, I mean, I did take a few years off from doing all this, practicing to be happy. I mean, that's what it is. Every day I get up and the first hour of my day consists of things that inspires me. It makes me motivated. It makes me want to move. I think somebody wrote one time, the first 30 minutes of the day is the golden 30 minutes of that day. But if you're like you, Tennis Tom, and you just hop up and you're ready to go, and you're fired up and you already got, you know, all this energy going on, then that's a good thing too, you know. But when I wake up, you know, I'm trying to drag my left arm and my right arm, and, you know, I'm getting my slapping myself awake, and I have to go and put this into my body, you know.
Herbie, I'm with you. No, I'm sitting there ruminating. I get up, make my coffee and my Pillsbury pastry strudel, and until I do that, I can't do anything. I realize I'm in this half-dream, half-awake state.
There you go.
And every day is a new day, trying to get fired up again. And
I see what you're saying. And that's what I believe, you know, a lot of us, if I know that's what happened to me when I had that last occurrence of back pain that laid me down for close to a year, was I got away from doing that every day. I thought, well, I ain't got to do this all the time. I can take off some time of this. I can be happy on purpose. And really, that's the true goal, is to be happy on purpose. But at the same time, I had to have those inspirations, those everyday things that just got me motivated. You know, even to do my meditations and all that day, I had to get that motivation that morning. I had to. It's sort of like getting up on the wrong side of the bed, they say. An old saying.
Well, I think one thing that's motivating me now is reading a couple of pages of Steve-O every day. Currently, that's what I look forward to, and that's what motivates me to brightens up my day and gives me hope.
That's good, and I love the way you and Forrest and Bruce, y'all all talked about these messages. And when I looked at the cover of his book and I first saw that word messages, I thought, well, I've never heard about messages before. But then all of a sudden I started understanding that these messages are pain. They can be emotional conflict. It can, and like I said earlier, it could be illness of some sort. And it's cool to know that, you know, your body will send you messages of discontent so that you can get yourself back balanced, so you can get that raise-soothe ratio back to where it needs to be, you know? Go ahead.
Excuse me. I think what I was writing in that string that Walt started was, I was talking about the two strategies about the generation of TMS tension. I was saying that there's one school that says that you should dig down deep and find the emotion, the buried emotion, the repressed emotion. And there's another one that says you should resolve the inner tension between, like, the superego and the id that are fighting all the time, that are creating this tension that's driving TMS.
Awareness. The resolve is through awareness. And if it's unconscious, there's really nothing you can do about it, right? But if it's when I say unconscious, if it's subconscious, there's nothing you can do about it. But if it's unconscious, then there is something you can do about it through, like, soothing, the raise-soothe ratio, being aware, using acceptance, using mindfulness. There's all kinds of ways that you can use that part. The first thing you said though, Bruce, that first sentence, what was it?
Oh, in that the business I wrote, I was just saying that there are two schools of what generates TMS and how you're going to resolve it. And one says it's the conflict, resolving the conflict between the id and the superego. And another one is digging deep back to this primal emotion and uncovering it.
I think it might be different for different people, Bruce. Like, for some people, there is a conflict that they're not aware of. They feel really bad about something. They feel really angry. Other people, they're also angry at themselves for feeling angry. Other people, it's just they aren't in touch with their emotions. They don't even know what they're feeling. I, for example, I think I probably fit in the latter group. You know, I think it's a process. I was just in the chat room. I was talking with Mandy about how it's all a process. And I feel the process for me is about developing an awareness of those emotions. But I think, you know, whichever model resonates with with each person, it feels like it's just so personal, TMS healing. You have to go out there, and there's a million people on the forum who are writing about what worked for them. And it's so exciting to read those things. And then you just have to say, okay, who are these that can I relate to? Who are these people feel like they're talking about my experience? Where do I see myself written on each page?
That's awesome, Forrest, and that's so true. But I did learn something this week, and it was new to me, because I'd always, you know, when I hear unconscious or subconscious, I always consider them to be the very same thing. But listening to Dr. Sarno, you know, again, on his tape, he explained the difference of the unconscious and the subconscious. And the unconscious is can actually do something with. We're still unconscious of what we're doing. It's sort of like everybody else around you knows what you're doing, but you don't. It's sort of this thing. If it's subconscious, other people don't know it. So it's you know, two different issues. Okay, we'll get back to the symptom imperative now.
Sorry. I was trying to get Bruce's attention. You can ignore me, Herbie.
Yeah. I didn't mean to go too far in that, guys.
I was just going through this the list of TMS equivalents that serve the same purpose as pain, that are part of the whole series of shifts that people go through when they experience the symptom imperative. And I see one of the ones I marked here is dry spot in throat. If you recall three or four sessions ago, my voice started to seize up while I was talking. And then I went away into the bathroom and took a glass of water, and it says dry spot in the throat. This may feel like a dry spot, but it usually occurs when there is a tense situation, like appearing on camera, like when you need to communicate something difficult to say. The inner self does not want to talk, and so id rebels. And so I said, that's a perfect example of this kind of phenomenon. It was like all of a sudden my throat got really dry and tight in one little spot. And then I said, oh, I'll go up and drink some water. But it was probably because I was feeling tense about my delivery.
Gosh, that's awesome, Bruce. You know, that's so much knowledge how you put that together while we're on the radio show here, so people can hear that and they can relate to it, and then they can put it together. That's good, man. Is there anybody that wants to ask any questions about the symptom imperative, and maybe, you know, something you might have that you might think might be a symptom imperative, or could it be a symptom imperative?
Well let me list a few more of these so we can
go ahead.
The appendix: fibromyalgia, hay fever, frozen shoulder, hypertension. He gets into hypertension, where this one fellow, Samuel Mann, MD, believes that about 20 to 25% of hypertension is due to TMS, and goes away with TMS therapy.
You know, I had high blood pressure, and after the TMS healing therapy, I haven't had no high blood pressure since. It wasn't extremely high, but it was staying, you know, borderline high. So that's awesome to know. You know, I didn't even know blood pressure had anything to do with it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Samuel Mann actually has a whole book about that, hypertension. And he wrote a chapter in The Divided Mind.
Yeah, hypertension
that's
and the
awesome.
Mind-body connection, a new paradigm. With Samuel Mann, MD, in The Divided Mind. And here's Dr. Sarno's own hobby horse, Lyme disease. Just because the Lyme disease antibody tincture is in the bloodstream doesn't mean the symptoms are coming from Lyme disease. As Dr. Sarno has shown, so-called LD symptoms are mitigated through TMS healing. People are always looking around to get tested for Lyme disease whenever they have some kind of psychic problem, I've noticed, or feeling run down, chronic fatigue. They often blame it on Lyme disease and go searching for tests, go to the doctor and pester them to see if they have it. Psoriasis, skin conditions, rotator cuff tear. Many of the so-called rotator tears were already existent, but on viewing the imaging, the surgeon often recommends unnecessary surgery. And I swear that's what happened to me when I tore my rotator cuff. I went into the doctor and he gave me an MRI at Kaiser and immediately said, cut, cut, cut. And my old doctor said, wait 6 weeks and see if it still hurts. And he gave me a range of motion test. And he said, if you can do this range of motions, hold your arm out like that, it's a partial tear. And sure enough, it healed up. But it hurt like bloody heck. And that was just at the time I had my relapse. Obviously, it was associated with TMS coming back.
Wow. So yeah, we got any questions from anybody about the symptom imperative, what you might have or have gone through or how it moved around in your body? Really, any questions, fine. Or somebody might want to talk about it.
Yeah, this is greetings from Michigan from Philly Joe.
Hey, Philly Joe.
One of the things I've been thinking about the last couple months is, and I'm not sure if it's more of a psychological symptom imperative, but a lot, like when you're feeling good and you're not in pain, I have a tendency, and this happens to be probably because of just of my personal anxiety and pessimistic outlook. I kind of question, oh gosh, why am I feeling good? Or I'm not allowed to feel good, or I'm not allowed to feel normal. And sure enough, that kicks in anxiety and some negative thinking. And the next thing you know, I'm feeling all those twinges that I haven't felt for a couple days. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in terms of a TMSer, it's almost like, and I know
that's called TMSing. Actually, what you just said is called TMSing. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like to call us TMSers. Yeah. So, yeah. One of the things I'm trying to learn in my TMS recovery, and in just in my life as a whole, especially as an anxious guy, is allowing myself to feel good, feel normal.
Yes.
So you just consider
that's
yourself.
That's a great idea.
Everybody's an anxious guy here. So, I mean, I just heard four people agree with you there, Philly Jones.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Also, I'm anxious
too.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you should be anxious in this world. If you're not anxious, then you're probably too stoned.
I can use a lot of that.
Tom, I've been working on that anxious feeling for a long time. That's the reason I said I have to get up every morning, you know, and start working on it. So what do you think, Tom?
Well, I'm glad to see Philly Joe here. Philly, did you have your knee surgery, or are you going to be having it soon? Or?
Well, I didn't want to bring that up as of yet, but yes, Tennis Tom, I had my knee surgery. They tore off part of the meniscus, which the doctor really felt was quite a bit of the problem. There was quite a bit of inflammation in the tissue that was repaired, and the doctor told me they're really hoping that the tissue will heal and come back healthier. Here's part of my negative thinking. I had so little pain. I had surgery on Thursday. On a Thursday, I was cutting grass on Saturday. I've been in PT for 3 weeks. I I don't mean not to be the postal for I don't want to come across of not using my TMS work.
No, Philly Joe, we love you, brother. We love you. Hey, we're all
feel good. That's a great thing.
Yeah. The PT has been, I just like the strengthening that I'm doing in some of the exercises, and I know that I've tried to learn not to do the whole exercise thing, not to get hurt, but I'm very, very encouraged. I'm going to try my first run on a machine this Friday. So overall, I am very positive with the surgery. But I think in terms of the symptoms imperative thing, what's very interesting for me is my anxiety has kicked in. So my physical pain has been almost, you know, when they say on a scale of 0 to 10, I'm almost at 0, literally, of pain in my knee, and yet psychologically, my anxiety has kicked in, and I'm not sure where that's coming from.
That is a symptom CMS. Imperative. Yep, yeah. Right there.
You think so? Okay, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like So going back to my original thought, it's almost like I can't even feel good about being physically pain free because I've been working on this anxiety stuff the last couple weeks.
You can feel good about being physically pain free, but at the same time, you might want to, you know, use some meditations, calming, soothing stuff to help the anxiety.
Oh, I am. But is there a connection there, you guys, with that, you think?
I apologize for bringing it up, and I don't mean to make you anxious, but we spoke before, and it's no
secret.
Yes,
we did.
You're very courageous, having had your surgery, which is a which I don't have the guts to do for my hip, and maybe should have a long time ago. And you're here, and you're talking about CMS. I find that very courageous on your part, and I wish you all the best. And you're kind of the test tube for the rest of us because you're doing the science for us. You know, like what is going to happen? So, and I really wish you all the best. And I might someday have my hip done too. You know, so thanks for sharing and having the courage to be here today.
Well, thank you. And just to tell others who are listening, Tennis Tom was very gracious, and we did speak over the phone back in the late summer, and he was very kind in terms of saying, listen, you've got to know. And when I was even talking before, other people in this forum were very helpful in just saying, listen, you got to do what you've got to do to take care of yourself. Like it's not a right issue or a wrong issue. And I think that in terms of having the surgery, that was very positive to me. So I thank you for those who supported me in my decision. No one said, no, absolutely don't do that, or that's absolutely wrong, or you're going against, you know, TMS philosophy. And that's why I'm back tonight listening to some of the wonderful things that are being said.
We all
glad to have you here.
Thanks for letting me share, as they say in support groups.
Great, man.
But awesome. You went about it the right way. You saw a TMS doctor, and the TMS doctor gave his imprimatur that he went along with your decision, or that surgery is okay. So given that, then I think you hit all your bases, and you did all your homework. And then you made the decision, well, weighing everything, this is what I'm going to go do, and you took charge of your own health.
That's great, but that's wonderful. But how come I'm still anxious? Come, I'm supposed to be completely healed by now, you guys.
You mentioned something bad with the attitude. What was it you mentioned that you said you called yourself something? You called yourself and you didn't say an angry person, but you called yourself something when you first
anxious. Anxious?
Did you
anxious,
say anxious?
Definitely anxious. Yeah,
did you
no,
call
but I've had
an anxious person.
I do, but I've had internal anger issues. Well, and I'm one of those guys who maybe like a lot of TMS people, I beat myself up a lot.
Okay, listen, there's a solution to this, and really, if you did it, I really believe it would help you with your anxiety. And it's the TMS recovery program on the TMS wiki form. Alan Gordon will go right in there and tell you exactly what you need right now, Billy Joe.
Okay. Very Alan good. I've seen that.
Yeah. He will tell you exactly what you're going through, about the voices, he'll tell you about the anger, he'll tell you about the critic and everything. Go ahead, Bruce.
Billy Joe, you can see how that operation was like a magnet for all of your anxiety and worry and stress before it happened. And then after it happened, it didn't do that same job for you anymore. So all that free-floating anxiety had to show up in mood alteration in your psychology. It's like the anxiety was the same before the operation, but then you got to worry about it. But once you'd had a successful outcome, then all of the same anxiety, all of the worry was released into your psyche, where it changed your mood. It came back at you.
Well, and this is that second thing that Steve was talking about, where the symptom imperative is there to let you know that it really isn't physical, that there's something deep inside that you're going to want to fix. You know, so it's there. It's like Lassie kind of barking. The barn is burning down. It's saying, hey, you know, I'm back. I'm the symptom imperative. Bruce talked about different categories of symptom imperative. Anxiety would be one of the dysthymic ones. Meaning
well, that's
bad.
What that means.
Thymia meaning feelings. So it just means a bad feeling.
Thanks, Bruce.
And I think this is a great opportunity to kind of slow down, to develop a little bit of mindfulness of where this anger comes from, to try to release some of that anger. Be honest with yourself. Make sure you understand it. Then try and release it. And did it work? Did I actually release it, or am I just thinking I'm releasing it? And then, to look at that, some of that anxiety, and let go of that anxiety. That's where some of the deeper work comes in. I run a mailing list with about 40 TMS psychologists on it, and I've been to all the conferences. I've spoken at all the conferences, and every time I talk to a TMS therapist, they say one thing, and they say that you got to figure that the heart of the symptom imperative is that you have to figure out what's the deeper tension, what's the tension that the symptom is there to warn you about. Steve talks about warning as one of the functions. What's it warning you about? What's Lassie barking at? And then maybe you can put out that fire a little bit. And that takes a little bit of time, but it's so rewarding when you do it. It's so nice to go on the forum and see people who are getting better. It just makes you happy.
Great. Thank you.
So just a follow-up question. So how do you go about finding out what the deeper tension is?
Well, I think Herbie's advice was a good one. I wish that I could bottle that. I see people who figure it out on the forum, and they're in a...
I could tell you a lot of different ways. I'm sure Tom could too.
They're in a different state. Let me finish. Ahead. I just want to say, I was talking to Mandy in the chat room earlier today, during this call. And I don't know if you guys remember, but earlier we had been talking about how Steve talks about creative people. Tennis Tom had brought it up. And Mandy said, Mandy, do you object if I read some of this from the chat room? She's in the chat room. Do you mind if I read it? Is that okay? Okay,
no,
good. So we were talking about creativity and how, this trauma early on leads to people being creative. And she said, oh, my word, I'm sitting here crafting as I listen. And I said, keeps you grounded. And she said, yes, art is an outlet for me. How nice is that? We've got all this tension and art is an outlet for her.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It's different for different people, too. She said, I have to be careful not to turn it into people pleasing because all of my friends will end up with a quilt.
So I love that though. Get back to doing what you love to do. Do something you love to do. That's awesome. I love that.
So there's a million different things. It's all about balance. That's why the yin yang symbol is on the cover of the book. And I think, it's a personal journey and we all take it. We all have to just listen. And just be honest with what you're feeling.
nowadays in times we got people, and it's called multitasking. And, you know, especially in the computer world and the computer age, where you try to do all these, you might have 10 different things on your mind going and actually doing 10 different things at once. And sometimes even that can cause, you know, enough tension in your body, you know, to cause rage to the id, to the kid on the inside of us. So, right. You know, kind of be aware of what it is that you're doing through the day that could be stressful, that could be tension causing, it could be causing you a strain, and then you'll start becoming aware of what's probably causing pain. Okay.
Right.
But again, you know, a lot of times we have to dig deeper than what we just see on the surface. But at the same time, as Sarno talked about the three phases of rage, you know, the pressures of life is one thing, but also, you know, like pressure, stressors, tension causing things. But then the other things like family and so much like that, you know. So just think about those issues as in right now. What's going on right now would be, you know, the factor. It might take you a month to figure it out, or 2 months, or a year. But as long as you're hitting at it, right, Bruce? As long as you're hitting at it, that's the key there. Don't try to focus on trying to.
As long as you're dealing with real problems instead of letting this free anxiety take over, because that creative personality can direct all that energy into all kinds of useless things. All of these symptom imperative symptoms, all of these distractions, but you have to do the real work of being really creative, not creative with your psyche in all of these evasive ways. You have to actually produce something out of this tension to resolve it. I don't know, I'm just kind of grabbing.
With that being said, the fear and the focus itself is components of the symptom imperative.
Exactly, the focus.
You know, you fearing the pain, or you focusing on the pain? Well, you working, the symptom imperative is working fine then. So, you know, that's something else that you have to work on, losing the fear
of
the pain.
It's like the RSI on my wrist that I experienced this weekend going up to the mountains. Well, as long as I taped it, use tape on it, and as long as I used the little wrist brace, it continued to hurt and bother me more and more. However, when I took the wrist brace off and the tape off and forgot about it, bango, it's gone. Obviously, I was focusing my anxiety on my wrist some way as a distraction from having to go up to the mountains and find my lost lamb.
That's pretty good. That's pretty cool how the mind works.
Yeah, it is. The childish part that doesn't want to do something practical like that. It would much rather have fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it'd go the first phase of rage.
Atonement pilgrimage.
I have a little.
Hey, Mandy, go ahead.
All right. Sorry. I have a little something to add about anxiety, because this is where my PMS came from. In a very traumatic childhood and a lot of things, I just became a worrier. And my worry and my anxiety was a tool in order to protect me from having something bad happen to me. So as a kid, I went through a lot of bad things, and the world was just scary to me. And so as I became an adult and had more control over things, worry became a way of, if I worried about something enough, then I could prevent it from happening. So that's where a lot of, you know, I have hypochondria, you know, health anxiety, and I worry about what's wrong with my body. And so that's a source of anxiety for me, because I haven't been able to physically explain it, so now I have to go psychologically and figure it out. But I know that my personality, if I don't have something to worry about, I can create something.
Yes!
Create something else to worry about.
Deceptive and
we can relate to that.
It's just to protect myself from something, which is is ridiculous because it's just paying on it's paying interest on something that's not going to happen, you know. But also
impending.
A lot.
They call it impending doom.
Impending doom.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. And it, you know, it's nothing I've ever worried about has ever come true, and I have to keep reminding. That's on my evidence sheet. I mean, I've had worries, some really crazy worries that I've all had disproven, and so I just have to keep reminding myself of that. But a lot of we were talking about not having fun and finding the balance. For me, you know, when my daughter was born, although I loved her dearly and she was the most precious thing in the world, I wanted to go to sleep sometimes and she was screaming at me, or I wanted to go sew, or I wanted to go work out, or I wanted to go out with my friends. And I had this little bundle that, you know, beautiful and all, she was just demanding every part of me. And there was nothing that I enjoyed. I did not enjoy my life for a long time because it was just like Groundhog Day. Like every morning you wake up and do the same thing. And I had to take care of her even though I felt like I had been hit by a Mack truck. And my whole body hurt. My head hurt. I had so many symptoms going on, and you know, my body was just screaming at me, telling me to get something back into balance. And it's been a long 3 years, but and I have to ask myself every day, like, where's the imbalance? Where's the imbalance? And you know, slowly and surely, I'm getting there. But that anxiety is trying to tell you something, and so you just have to. It's very difficult when you're going through this to try to quiet your mind.
Yeah.
I know. What I've done is, like, when I've gone to sleep at night, when I've done my meditation before, I've just said, okay, I don't know what you're trying to tell me, but just tell me, somehow tell me. And I've had dreams where, you know, I've had an angry fight with my mother and just said things to her in my dream that, I've never been able to say to her because I'm a good person. But just kind of ask yourself, like, what are you trying to tell me? What are you trying to tell me? And just try to quiet your mind and let it come out. And it takes a while, and you're not always going to get an answer, but you might see something come out.
Very good. Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I do. I've had so many times I'd lay down and I would tell myself, tell me what it is, and have a dream or something, and I would wake up and know. I would be aware finally of what the unawareness and an issue at the time or was causing a lot of stress in myself. It would solve it when I would just lay down and tell myself that night, tell me what it is. It doesn't happen every time, but the times it did happen, it really gave me a big relief today to know what the issue was. That's Andy, I know that works firsthand.
Thanks for jumping in and sharing. It's I know we got a lot of people who love to talk here, but I just love it when you jump in and share your experience, Mandy. So thanks for pushing through.
Yeah, that's awesome, Mandy.
If I could jump in to try to answer the question, what's causing the tension or what is the tension? Well, the Reiki Holmes, I think, is a tool that I always recommend first off. If people think, what am I looking for? Take a look at the Reiki Holmes list. And I think, Forrest, you said you've been in contact with Dr. Reiki or Dr. Holmes, and he's
Indeed,
doing an update.
He was very helpful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry, what's this list?
I'll
well,
paste it
the
in the chat room.
Okay.
If you just Google TMS Holmes Reiki. It's kind of hard to spell is the problem. Holmes, like Sherlock Holmes, and Reiki is R-A-H-E. But if you do that, our page about TMS will come up, and it's pretty good. And and we've got something written by Dr. Sherman, who just is wonderful thing written by Dr. Sherman. He's one of Dr. Sarno's core
Eric Sherman, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And we've got the scale itself, so you can check it out.
Okay.
So
cool.
I think first place someone new should look at that list, and it goes anywhere from death of a spouse being one of the highest to lowest paying off a mortgage or Christmas or something. And that's a good place to start looking. And if any of those events happened in the previous year, that's a contributor. But it's your entire life. At the end of chapter 10, Steve-O says he believes it starts with separation anxieties, and then later with trauma or multiple little traumas. And then you have everyday things. So it's a multiple of your entire life, past, your personality, your team's personality, being a goodist, and then going through the day and having the entire universe bombarding you with things causing irritation and inputs. So it is a whole ball of everything that causes TMS and can bring the reservoir to overflowing and creating a symptom imperative in order to be a defense mechanism against facing all that shit. Pardon me.
That's it, bro.
Tough.
That's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, but it seems to be that there's a resonance going on here where how great the initial separation anxiety was in your childhood is a strong predictor about how you'll respond to these stressors that come inevitably as you go through life. The death of mom, the death of dad, a divorce, loss of income. It seems like people who have not been that stressed out to begin with separation anxiety, confront these problems later on without going psychic, without going TMS ballistic. I think it's like soldiers in combat. That's why they screen them, because they know that the ones who've had conflicted childhoods will break down in combat sooner than those who have not.
Wow. That's actually some of the research that Dr. Ray has done. So the guy from Holmes and Ray, he actually was a psychiatrist working for the Navy. And one of his great professional interests throughout his career is understanding who gets PTSD. So who goes off to war and comes back traumatized versus who doesn't. And it's similar to that idea of the two trauma mechanism, that what leads to PTSD often is something bad happens in your childhood, and then you go to war, and it's the two things working together that lead to the more severe case of PTSD. And I can relate to that myself. I mean, I've been through it all. Let me tell you, my mother died when I was 9, and I think that was kind of my early trauma. Steve talks about separation. That's a pretty big separation. And then later on when I had stress in my life, that was the thing which kind of tipped me over into TMS. So makes sense to me.
Hey guys, I'm going to see if Joan wants to say anything. She did see Dr. Sarno. She saw Rashbaum and she's had a reoccurrence, and maybe she has a symptom imperative we can talk about. Is that okay?
Yes, I do. Every once in a while, I get a pain in my hip, but I know that that's a symptom imperative. I just talk to it, and it goes away. What I wanted to ask any of you, and I think I've asked this question before, is the severity of the pain. Does that indicate something really deep? My pain is severe.
I don't really know if it represents something really deep. I know it represents, what causes TMS. Have you got your finger on something that might be causing it, Joan?
There were a few things, yes.
Okay, you got a few things that might be causing it. Are you working at, resolving these issues through mindfulness, or is it something that you can't resolve?
Well, this is what I also wanted to ask you tonight, just about soothing yourself. What would be your way or anyone's way of soothing,
okay.
Your mind?
Hey, Joan. This is Mandy, or Panda Girl. The Alan Gordon program, If you'll find that on the wiki, there is an exercise that Alan taught me to go through soothing yourself, and it takes you back to being a child. And if you imagine yourself as a kid, like even if you have a picture, if you have a picture of yourself from you when you were a child, and just imagine yourself as a kid, as a baby, and then be a soothing mother and just talk to yourself as that little child and, you know, say, you know, I know it hurts, it's okay, everything's going to be fine. But go listen to that, and it'll walk you through that. And it's something that I found very, very helpful. You feel a little bit silly at first, but it's helpful.
On the website of...
Yeah, it's on the wiki. Let me see if I can... Oh, you're not on the chat. I was going to say, if you go to the... Well, you know what, Forrest or Eric can probably direct you better than I can to it, but it's on the wiki under Alan Gordon's recovery program.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Excuse me. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I was muted, so I couldn't talk back then. But if you just Google Alan Gordon TMS Wiki and recovery program, it'll pop right up top link.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Forrest, can I ask you, how's Steve doing? Steve was in the CE. I guess we missed him at the meeting last week.
Yes,
have you heard from him?
Thank you for bringing that up. I did. I talked to him, or I sent him an email. He's doing fine. There was just a big miscommunication. He had wanted me to send him connection details. I thought he was gonna get them from the forum, but he's got a publicist that he's working with right now, so he's super, super busy. So he hasn't been getting to the forum, and he didn't know if I was interested, and he had a radio show that he really wanted to do at 8:00, so he ended up just doing that, and we missed him. I tried calling him. I called him a million times during the show, but I think he was already on the radio show, so he didn't get the call. But yeah,
hopefully
he's doing
fine.
Get him
back. Hopefully we can get him back someday, because I think he'd be a great one to answer some of these questions that we're having problems with. And knowing him a little bit that I do, I think he would he will definitely do it someday. It's just a matter of getting the connection. And I wish him all the best in getting his book out there in front of the public. And I know he's a good guy, and he'll help us out someday coming here.
Yeah, no, it's he actually already has been here. I think we have two recordings of him so far, from different podcasts that he's dropped in on. One was scheduled, and then Herbie, he just dropped by during the summer one time, right?
Yeah, just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll listen to him. Great. Oh, I didn't know that. Good.
Yeah, just about four. I think it's about four discussions ago. He took over the whole show. And it was the Steve Osinich show, and one thing about listening to full of wisdom, a lot of knowledge, and you'll get the understanding. And Steve's so brilliant, you know. He wrote the book.
I was just looking at the receipt of my book. I bought it like over a year and a half ago, and I'm only halfway through it. And I hope it lasts forever, but. It just every page is a gold mine of wisdom, and I think he does such a wonderful job of making sense out of the complexities of the human psyche, and it's helping me a lot just reading a couple of pages every day of it.
That's good. I think that's the best way to read any TMS book, Tom. You hit it right on the head. That's the way I do it. I'm still reading through Steve's book, and I've had it over a year. So just take your time and let this healing, let the cure saturate and get in there and just do its perfect work, you know? Don't try to rush it.
It really is the perfect way to read it, because I think that a lot of people, they dash through TMS books thinking that the book themselves is going to heal them, and it just doesn't work that way. You have to work it slowly. You have to think about it. And I think that's one of the issues with the Alan Gordon program. So Herbie and Walt and I and Becca have all been working on something to kind of slow people down with the Alan Gordon program, to give them some other stuff, to a little bit of commentary to read along the way, and to break it up day by day, have a couple of writing assignments. Should be good. We'll I was thinking we should maybe do a beta, release a beta version of it at some point.
A comment about that. I went through the Alan Gordon program, I know, a few weeks ago, and it was great, but it was almost like it was over too fast.
Yeah.
And I was like,
definitely.
Yeah. That was Deepster just talking, and I want to say how he said he sues himself, everybody. And he says, I soothe myself by telling myself I'm not going to jump on the fear and preoccupation bandwagon. And I think that's pretty cool. You go through your day and just don't focus on the fears. And that's going to tie up a lot right there, you know?
Yeah, because I used to ride that bandwagon. Like, that was kind of my MO. I just, you know, I just jump on there and, you know, just kind of obsess about everything. And it's like, oh, if I don't obsess about it, that's kind of like, that's half the issue right there, right?
Yeah.
Just get on with my life.
That's it. Absolutely. I want to throw in something that a guy named Balto from another website, I want to say something he said. He was talking about quitting smoking. And when he said, every time I thought about the withdrawals, he said, you know, I might go 2 or 3 days without smoking. Every time I thought about the withdrawals, I would go right back to smoking. He said, but then he started understanding that when he was focusing on the withdrawals, and he said he just decided to quit of thinking that he was going to have withdrawal symptoms and quit of focusing on it. And that's how he was able to stop smoking cigarettes. Plus, he's used that to help him heal pain, too, was to stop focusing on, you know, because we all think we're going to have withdrawals if we stop smoking or whatever it might be. But he stopped it just through a stop, you know, thinking that the withdrawal was going to, you know, affect him, if that helps anybody with this. But I believe it does. It's about focus, you know.
Absolutely. There's actually been a lot of research on the idea of thinking about and then rethinking about and reviewing again one's worries. They call it rumination, and it is not good. And just teaching yourself to break the cycle of rumination, to break the thoughts that lead you into the cycle of rumination, very, very helpful. Good stuff.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is. Jay? Hey, buddy, you haven't got to say anything tonight. Are you here? Okay. Anybody else want to say anything about the symptom imperative? Because we have got more than enough people here to help you out.
I can just relate an experience. So some of my symptoms are kind of are gastrointestinal, and there was so I've had at various times issues with acid reflux, as well as issues with constipation. And there was a period where the acid reflux was kind of okay, but the constipation was really bad. And at the time I started seeing an acupuncturist. He was like, okay, you know, this constipation should be pretty easy to deal with. You know, gave me a treatment or two, some herbs. And then, you know, I think things started turning around after not too long. But then all of a sudden I was on vacation and bang, the acid reflux just majorly flared up out of nowhere. And almost at the same time, the constipation was like just completely went away. And it was just at the time I was just completely baffled. I was like, well, you know, what just happened? Like,
sounds like a symptom imperative, don't it?
You know, that they could be related. But, you know, I just thought, yeah, it was really weird.
You but didn't now, notice the back, you didn't notice the connection at the time.
Well, no, I just thought that, you know, I got the treatment for the one, and that's why I got better. Oh. And then for some other reason, this other thing flared up.
Yeah.
You hear how Bruce connects the emotion with the pain or the incident with the pain that he was talking about earlier, Bruce? he'll connect the incident or the stress or the tension or the emotion with the pain. And then when he does that, he gets an aha moment. Not always, but he'll get an aha moment, and it helps, and it helps soothe him in a way. It helps get him through, you know, and he keeps getting better and better and better. Bruce, you talk about that?
Well, it's learning too, isn't it? Learning Yes. does take place despite your best efforts to the contrary. You notice when you make the connection between, like, the RSI I was having in my wrist, but the anxiety of losing the lens and having to drive up to Yosemite and eat crow, going through all of this, these psychic barriers. Well, they're like, what does William Blake call them? Mind-forged manacles. They're things that you've done to yourself. And then when you realize that the pain in your wrist was due to the anxiety associated with the trip, then it vanishes. You're no longer focusing and obsessing on it anymore. And then it loses its, that's like the symptom imperative. It loses its power over you.
I think that's
like
powerful.
An exorcism. It's like something like that, you know.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bruce.
No, it's just what Dr. John can do for you out in the clearing in the Amazon. You know,
yeah,
when he does his ritual, it exercises whatever demon is causing this pain in your wrist, and then it disappears. And the demons are really psychic demons. They're things in your personality. Dr. John must be able to size you up when he takes a look at you and see what ails you psychologically, and knows just the right ritual to put you through. When he dances around in the circle and kills the chicken and drinks the rum, he puts you into a plastic state of consciousness where he can mess with those things. He hypnotizes you. Yeah, the same way the bad doctor
talking about it.
Yeah, the same way the bad doctor hypnotizes you with his faulty diagnosis, which provides you with a mechanical solution. This guy gives you a real spiritual solution, if you will, or, you know, in this post-Cartesian world we live in, I guess you have to ascribe that stuff to the spiritual and the psychological.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, that hits right at the beginning of the chapter, talking about the mind, body, and spirit, the very first sentence there. I want to read it right quick, and then I want to ask Jay something. But it says, obviously, pain isn't the only manifestation of subconscious tension, anxiety, rage, fear, or social imitation. Pain is but one symptom of an infinite array of messages revealed through the dissonance of mind, body, and spirit. So, you know, basically, that just told me that... you know, you can have this TMS revealed through the mind, which might be anxiety. You know, you can have it revealed through the body, which might be pain. You can have it revealed through the spirit, which might be a fear. It's pretty awesome how these messages can come to you and tell you, you know, it's time to get back in balance. It's time to get back in relationship, you know. Hey, you was fishing to say something, or... We haven't got to hear from you. Are you there, buddy?
Yeah, me?
Yeah, well, is your experience with the symptom imperative?
Oh, yeah. Reading those 10 things in chapter 10, well, the study gets 10 of them in chapter 10. I was looking at those. I had so many equivalents of TMS, and... I assume they're all imperatives. I've not heard that term before tonight, but it all works. I'm assuming imperative means that it's necessary to keep me basically scared, and that's what hurts me the most. Oh. Is fear. I'm driven by a million forms of fear, and I've had psoriasis. I've had bouts of psoriasis, eczema. The hip, the shoulders, the GERD, the gastrointestinal stuff, and one after the other, and it moves around like that. And backs, back, low back to mid back to low back. But what I noticed is seldom do I have more than one of those things at a time. If I do, the others, the main one will be there, and if I have another one at all, it'll be very mild while the bad one's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get rid of one, when I finally work through this episode of back problems, the low back trouble I'm having now, if it takes a few months, a year, whatever, then you can bet then after that I'll have a tendency to have more esophageal reflux and stuff. I'll have to deal with that too. It's like it will not leave me in peace. It's determined that I stay afraid of something all the time to keep me distracted.
Jay, you're mentioning the fear, and go ahead, Bruce.
Jay, you say that those symptoms are mutually exclusive. Then you have
right.
one, and you don't have the other. When you have the other, then you don't have the original one.
That's right, for the most part. Not 100%, but yeah.
This chapter can focus your mind on that, I think. Once you become uh-huh. aware of that, that's a good way to become mindful of how this process works.
And that's exactly what happened to Deepster. And I loved the way that you focused on fear. I thought Steve talks about that too. He says, as long as there is unresolved conflict, those demons that Bruce was talking about, the mind will continuously shift symptoms to keep fear alive as a purposeful distractions. The symptoms bounce around the body to keep you feeling that you have suddenly developed a real pain or real injury. The brain scans the body until it finds an area or symptom that you are most fearful of, and then it induces a symptom there and lingers, waiting for your response to it. If you don't fear that area much or don't pay much attention to that particular symptom, it will shift to another area until it can grasp your attention again somewhere else, all in an attempt to keep you from tending to your emotions. I just thought that was so beautifully written. I know you, Jay, well enough to know that you already know that, but I couldn't resist reading it.
Thanks.
Yeah, this is some of Steve's best writing, I think, in these brief three pages. And the way he ties it together in the appendix with other symptoms that function with a symptom imperative, TMJ, teeth grinding, bruxism, frequent urination, tinnitus. I know a woman who's roamed around the world trying to cure her tinnitus, and she's constantly anxious and afraid. She tries to break in on TV shows and have interviews and write books. It's become her, and she's completely concerned about the welfare of her son too, and being a perfect mother. But her tinnitus, as my late mother said, is really in her head. It's something she can, and here it's another thing that works as a symptom imperative.
The tension of being
so
the
much in here.
Perfect mother.
Yeah, the perfectionist stuff, and whiplash too. There's long sections on whiplash in this appendix. If you read this whole appendix, it's like a compendium of almost every kind of symptom you could have.
Yeah, you know, so when people ask a question, you know, to me, you know, about how, you know, could this be TMS, you know, Herbie or Eric, they'll ask me that. And often if I can't find it right quick, I just look at Steve's appendix A, you know, or chapter 10 here, and look at it right there. He's done a 10-year, you know, he took 10 years to write this book. So I'm like, you know, he really knows what he's doing. And I jump over there. If I see it as a symptom imperative, that's what the symptom imperative is. It's just another form of TMS. That's exactly what it is. And it's just moved somewhere else in your body. And it still means, you know, that you got some soothing to do. You got some figuring out to do. What is it that, you know, you haven't accomplished yet? What is it that's getting on your nerves too much? Maybe, you know, the husband is just too much pressure on you. I don't know. But, you know, they reveal it through telling what they go through. And it's a lot of times it's real easy to see just through their writings what the issues are. Then, as we know, it always can get a lot deeper. But, wow, this guy's. Anybody else got anything to say about this? I know Tom's is burning up, and Tom's always burning up to say something.
Well, no, I want to ask well, the group. Well, I want to ask.
Yeah.
I would like to ask the group. Ask you guys a question. That you know, I mean, I've just this is something that seemed so physical until I didn't question it too much until recently. We've been doing all the talk about. Tinnitus ringing in the ears. About 15 years ago, during the course of a day, I was taking a lot of anti-inflammatory drugs at the time because I thought I had inflammation, which I did not have. They weren't doing any good, but I was taking them anyway. And during the course of a day, when I got up one morning, my right ear went completely out during the course of that day. The hearing left slowly through the day, and in the place of it, of the hearing, came tinnitus, or ringing. And by the end of the day, it sounded like a freight, not a ringing tinnitus, it sounded like a freight train roaring in my ear. I could not have tolerated it. I would have gone crazy. I went to the ENT the next day, and he said I had a viral attack, in his opinion. How he knew, he wasn't looking, he wasn't Superman, he didn't have x-ray vision. But he said I had a viral attack to the auditory nerve. And that part of the hearing could come back, all of it or none of it. Well, part of it came back, the low tones came back in the ear after several days, but the high tones never did. And I can just partially hear out of that ear. But the tinnitus is just god-awful, and that's, I've acclimated for the most part to that, but it's just there all the time, and I cannot hear much out of that ear. And he told me that when the hearing left, the ringing or the tinnitus was a manifestation of the deafness. Now, I thought that sounded so physical, I never questioned it, but from listening to you guys all these weeks, I wondered, do you think that could be TMS?
Well, the selective business with the different tone ranges. If that, I'm not an MD again, but it certainly sounds like the selective nature of it could be TMS.
Okay.
Because if your auditory nerve was attacked by a virus, it sounds like it would be across the full range of hearing. But many cases of tinnitus are psychological. Almost
Jay,
any symptom you can have.
Yeah,
can be a
Jay, have you tried to lose? How long have you had it now?
15 years.
15 years. So obviously, after 15 years, you've learned to get your mind on other things, right? You haven't kept your focus on it for 15 years, obviously, right?
No, I don't. I've acclimated to it for the most part. You know, I hear with my left ear, and I talk at the telephone with my left ear, and so forth. So I've just done the bit. I don't go around thinking about it. It doesn't scare me. It doesn't provide fear for me the way the back and the debilitation of the structural muscle problems do and stuff like that. It just does not present that. I'm sure it does.
So it knocks some of your hearing down. The reason you talk on to the other ear because the other ear you can't hear too good through it.
I could hold a conversation with you in that ear because you have low tones like with a man, but I cannot hold a conversation in that ear with a woman because her tones are too high, and I don't have the high tones.
Okay, and now it still though it could be subconscious. You know, it could be a TMS, and because of what the doctor told you, it could be like a meme. like we were talking about last week, I think, and it could be, you know, solidified in your subconscious. So,
absolutely, I believe in it.
Yeah, I would do some deeper searching on that, and actually start trying to do things like maybe even speak to somebody, a woman or something, with that, and believe that you can hear through that ear, and practice that for a while, and start seeing.
Good idea. Yeah. Good idea. I'll do that.
Okay, guys, it's already 10:30, so we went over a little bit, and we always do, and because it's such good discussions, and everybody's has such powerful input, this is so much not therapy that we speak about. I love this chapter 10 here. It does tell a lot. It reveals a lot of the TMS, what TMS wants to keep secret. We're catching on to it. Has anybody got any closing words to say before we decide to call it a night?
Yeah, one quick thing. Steve-O has on the first page of Chapter 10, a lot of people say, is it TMS or isn't it? How do you tell? He's got a little warning box at the bottom. He calls it the 5 B's, that you should get it checked out. If it's bleeding, bumped, broken, or bruised, that you should rule out dangerous possibilities. So there's his 5 B's at the box, that if any of those are happening, you should maybe get them looked at by a competent physician, preferably a TMS-savvy one, which there are few and far between.
Man, I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. That's awesome, because I wasn't even looking at that. That's great, Tom, that you brought that up.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Broken or bruised.
It seems that sounds all physical to me, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like there's hope there, you know. It's you know, with your issue there, Jay. Okay. Well, anybody else got anything finally to say before we call it a night? I think it's been a great discussion, guys. I want to thank Deepster, Bruce MC. I want to thank Forrest, Tennis Tom. I want to thank Jay. I want to thank Mandy. I want to thank everybody. John, we know you there, hon. I want to thank everybody for showing up here tonight. Everybody had a powerful, part to put into this knowledge therapy that we're doing. And it does help us to know the symptom imperative. So many people, they get better in one area and they get bad in another area, and they say, well, that didn't work. And yeah, it works. You just got to keep on doing what you're doing. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording, and we'll be on to chapter 11 next week. And thank you, everybody, and bless you.